If the music is playing, you know it's time for Pop Culture Happy Hour, where we have real discussions of pop culture while enjoying imaginary refreshing beverages. I'm here with the usual squad. I'm going to start over here. Who are you guys on my left? Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
And how about next to you? Who are you?
I'm Trey Graham. I'm your editor on the pop culture blog Monkey See.
Oh, and how about you over here?
I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comics for NPR.
And it's probably fair for me to add that I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog Monkey See, and that's why I'm here.
Hey. Well, you know, we're happy to have you, Linda Holmes.
It's why we're all here. You are the the star around whom we revolve.
Oh, my good grief.
It should be pointed out that even I underestimated the appeal of one Linda Holmes.
Oh, this is not about the appeal of that. This is about the appeal of your story. Go ahead and explain what you're
all
talking about, because we're just going to confuse people.
In last week's episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, I did a call out, letting everyone who listened know that if they would like a 9,600-word recap of the fifth episode, not the finale, not the pilot, the fifth episode of The Bachelor Pad.
One of the worst shows on television.
Well,
yes,
absolutely.
You know, I found my enjoyment of it was greatly enhanced by a 9,600-word recap.
I like how it's grown 100
yeah,
words.
I did a word count. I thought it was 9,500. It's actually, once you combined them and changed all the swears.
But 19 pages. That's
it is 19 pages long. It is wonderfully fantastic. It
written was given, by the formidable Linda Holmes.
Written by Linda Holmes, who used to do television recaps for Television Without Pity. This was given to me as a gift, and I thought that I would, as the kids say, pay it forward.
You're just making more people ask for it.
Seriously, I knew that there was no way I was saying the words pay it forward without at least one ugh. Anyway, I decided that I would share this gift with our public, and it turns out that a lot of people emailed. So I thought, you know, the show comes out on Friday. I have no plans on Friday night. So, you know, it'll be an opportunity to just kind of sit down and you know, fire off a bunch of little PDFs, and oh, that'll be sweet. You know, we'll hear from our public. And then I realized that podcasting is forever, which means that every day a new crop of, you know, 40, 50, 60 people.
Write to Stephen Reads a Book.
That's right, at gmail.com.
I've decided that in the future, my future call-outs will be asking people to submit their unrequited praise.
Don't, he's not asking.
I'm not. No. And seriously, people, the offer still stands.
The rage and resentment is entirely feigned.
Yes. I actually don't mind at all. I love sharing this recap. It is a wonderful thing. Please request your 9,600-word Bachelor Pad recap at Stephen Reads a Book, STEPHEN, readsabook@gmail.com.
You might want to hold off, because next week it'll be 9,700 words.
We're going to keep adding. She's going to keep adding quips.
She's keep adding jokes.
Or next week it's going to be, you know, perhaps a recap of something else entirely. You never know. You never know what might happen.
Many have added that they would like to see you recap other things. I will not email those those things. We can set up a perhaps
an autoresponder.
If only somebody had some sort of blog that they could post those things on, so I wouldn't have to send out all these PDFs. It has been incredibly lovely to hear everyone's feedback. I still haven't copied and pasted everyone's emails into a master document to share with these guys, but all of your notes have been read and adored and appreciated and shared. So thank you so much for writing.
And he's been kind enough not to tell me about the emails that say, she did what? All right. Speaking of, you know, Stephen mentioned earlier rage and resentment. And speaking of that, it's the first week of the fall TV season.
Oh.
It's that all the shows are starting at the same time, all the network shows. And in fact, some of the cable shows. And even HBO got in the game this week. They started their big Boardwalk Empire on Sunday. And everybody's, you know, they're all launching absolutely all of the shows at the same time. So what we thought we would do at the opening of the TV season, we're each going to talk about one returning show that we're going to be happy to have back. And then we're going to talk about one new show that we're kind of curious about. Now, originally, this was going to be one new show that we're really excited about. And then I broke it to these guys. There aren't four shows that anybody would logically be excited about.
There are more people in this room
than there are exciting new
shows. And I will say, we are taping this on Tuesday, and Lone Star was on last night, Monday.
Yeah.
And tanked completely. And that was the only new show The only new network show, certainly.
The only good new network drama.
Worth being remotely excited about, and it tanked utterly.
So does that mean that basically people are going to be sending out petitions in order to watch the last 5 episodes or whatever?
Yes,
or?
Quite possibly. I mean, yeah. I would be surprised to see. Well, we'll have to see how long it lasts. We'll have to see what they want to do about the 13 episodes of
it. Does that factor in time shifting? Because I DVR'd it. I'm not going to watch it until the weekend.
I mean, time shifting will help up to a point, but it was bad enough that
it was bad compared to other shows. Can you give me a quick rundown on what is Lone Star? It's not related to the John Sayles movie.
Correct. Lone Star is a drama on Fox about a con man in Texas who has a girlfriend and a wife and a bunch of other stuff going on.
Okay, I have been faking this for so long that I actually know how to read these things. I know how to tell a good deal, Dad, and I know how to tell a bad.
The only good deal is when you can see the exit when you're walking in the front door.
Dad, do you understand that we don't have to fake anymore? We can build something real here. You want money, Dad? There is plenty of money, huh? You can come live with me. I'll put you on the staff. I'll pay you really well to consult.
I did not spend my life hunting an elephant to get a job. This is about moving to an island full of topless women, not dragging my ass to a cubicle every day. Now you get your mind right, and let's focus on how to do this.
And it's very good, and the young actor who's in it is just absolutely fantastic. It's the best network show this fall, easily.
Of the new shows.
And Linda sort of used this as a jumping off point for a conversation on All Things Considered this week about how networks are sort of taking some cues from the cable networks as they try to snag some of that serious drama audience back.
Right. And obviously, you know, this is exactly one of the things you're going to see is the networks are going to start to say to you, yeah, well, you know, we see all these Emmys for these cable shows. We see that we've been largely cut out of the Emmy races. And then we try to make a show that's the kind of show that might win an Emmy when it's on cable and nobody watches it.
Right.
So the problem that the networks have is they attempt to compete with cable in the area of serious drama that is winning Emmys for cable networks. And they try some of the same qualities of in the shows and some of the same structural things, and then they find that nobody watches.
Is it that they reach the same number of people, but because it's on a network, that number needs to be bigger?
I think even for a cable show, this would be a little bit low. And of course, on cable, it varies a lot, too. There are cable shows that get lots and lots of people that get, you know, numbers that would almost be competitive on networks.
Right.
And then there are cable shows that are beloved and don't. I mean, even a show like Mad Men, really, not very many people watch.
Right.
Honestly. So the point being, we're already in a week where there weren't that many shows to be excited about anyway, and the one that was actually quite interesting has already tanked. So, and also I was pointing out to people that I got a press release today, the same day as the Lone Star tanked news broke. I got a press release about how Fred the Movie on Nickelodeon was a massive success. And Fred, if you don't know who Fred is, ask an 8-year-old. Yeah. And Fred is a YouTube sensation. He is a kid who goes around talking in a funny, high-pitched, sped-up voice.
Hi, it's Fred. I'm in my front yard. There's my mom's car right there. That's my mom's car. It's pretty nice. 4th of July is the best day. And over here, it'll make you so happy because you get to play with fire. You get to play with fire.
So Lone Star is a flop, but Fred the Movie is a huge success, which just goes to prove once again that we all get the television that we deserve. So with that cheerful beginning to our conversation, let's start with returning shows. Let's start with the easy one because it's easy to generally find something that's coming back that you're happy about. Glenn, why don't you start? What's your returning show?
It occurs to me that neither one of them are network shows. Does that matter?
No, it doesn't matter. No.
All right. The Venture Brothers is back.
Oh.
Back half of season 4, premiered last Sunday night. And it's been since December since we had any new episodes. This is on Cartoon Network on the Adult Swim block on Sunday nights. And, you know, a lot of the shows on the Adult Swim block, I am either too old and or too not high to enjoy. Squidbillies,
you know, one of those is a problem that you can solve.
Right. Well, that's... Yeah. I don't think I would find Aqua Teen Hunger Force funny even if I was.
Hmm. Oh, I know some very, very excitable fans of Aqua Teen Hunger
understand
Force.
I understand that.
I'm actually going to set
it's
up a separate a Gmail account.
I appreciate that.
Glenn hates Aqua Teen Hunger Force at gmail.com.
Oh, I thought you were going to go for Glenn Weldon Gets High.
Oh. that's, if you would like to groundswell.
If you would like to get Glenn Weldon High.
Tell us more about Venture Brothers,
All
Glenn
right.
Weldon.
If you want to see a show that knows exactly what it is, that knows its tone, that nails its tone, that is fully arrived, that has had enough time to kind of get to know its characters and is now just, I don't want to say relaxing, but is allowing itself to kind of explore new little sort of subsections of each character. It's just a lot of fun. It's a show that is joke dense in a way that a lot of the other shows on Adult Swim are just sort of attitude dense. The writing of this show, it cultivates its fan base with an accent on cult, because it goes in for a lot of murmured asides. You have to see episodes again, but there's just so many jokes. The premise, of course, that is, what if Johnny Quest grew up to become a brilliant scientist slash adventurer who was also a craven coward, and with two idiot sons and a bodyguard with a dark, violent past. This show...
Oh, sure.
Right.
I've thought of that many times myself.
High concept.
Yes, exactly. But that's the thing. It's very absurd. It's very crazy. But the voice acting is underplaying it in such a great way.
Gentlemen and lady, I give you... the henchman of the future. A mighty monarch Mark V hench suit. Made of flexible polyalloy, they are lightweight, fireproof, and bulletproof. All controlled via heads-up display built right into the state-of-the-art helmet. Which reminds me. People, I'm told you're using too much bandwidth. So if you're not using the internet for official monarch business...
Wait a minute. This is not forced cartoony voice acting. This is just... It has the rhythms of a movie. It has the rhythms of an indie movie, as a matter of fact. It's got crazy obscure references every week, which I love. I believe I caught last week an Automan reference. Anyone?
Wow.
Automan. Okay. 1984 ABC series starring your Desi Arnaz Jr.
Your Desi Arnaz
Wow.
Jr.
Your improbably named Chuck Wagner. Desi Arnaz Jr. played a cop slash computer programmer, you know.
As one does.
Right. Chuck Wagner played a hologram that fights crime with a little floating cursor that turns into a Lamborghini Countach or a helicopter.
Well, you know, if you're going to be a hologram, you might as well fight crime. Because
exactly.
You do have some natural advantages over people who have a corporeal form to worry about.
Yes, they have the angry captain.
That's what's been holding me back.
It's your corporeal form.
Right, yeah.
But a crazy tossed-off reference to that in the middle of everything else. So it's long overdue, and I'm glad it's back.
That sounds like definitely something I would try.
It's so much fun. The barrier to entry now, season 4.5, might be a little high because there's a lot of stuff.
Speaking of a little high.
Yes.
This is a show that it's best to follow in order.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Are early seasons on DVD?
They certainly are.
Because I know that Frisky Dingo, speaking
yes,
of...
Yes, exactly.
Is on
Frisky
DVD.
Dingo, I miss Frisky Dingo.
Linda and I'm assuming you guys are...
We have heard of Frisky Dingo, yes.
Frisky Dingo.
Do you need to borrow my DVD?
Oh, that.
Possibly, yes.
I miss you, Frisky Dingo.
It's a great show.
I highly recommend Frisky Dingo.
But yes,
I don't even know how to describe the plot of Frisky Dingo.
Do not try.
Oh,
but definitely try. Pick up Venture Brothers. Man, it's just, it does develop, characters change, characters die, but it's so good.
Spoiler alert.
Mm.
Sounds awesome.
I agree.
All right, Trey Graham, how about you, returning show?
Oh, well, you know, Glee, of course, because I'm drawn that way. I confess,
like Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah,
exactly.
I confess to a lingering curiosity, too, about whether American Idol can get any less interesting.
Oy.
So I'll be watching that. Mm. You know, the one genuine, legitimate, unalloyed pleasure I'm anticipating is Dexter.
Oh, sure.
I've been watching it since the beginning, and the surprise at the end of the last season, mm-hmm. speaking of spoiler alerts,
yeah, did
catch me by surprise, mm-hmm. because Dexter doesn't often get caught quite that flat-footed.
Mm-hmm.
So it strikes me that the writers of that show are still doing their job pretty well, and I'm looking forward to mm-hmm. seeing what they come up with this season.
We would put Dexter under not entirely likable main characters on
cable
dramas.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Flawed.
Yes.
Flawed.
The hero with a tragic flaw.
Flawed. Bloody and flawed.
Yeah. This show angers my partner, who is from Miami, because it is clearly not filmed in Miami. The way that, say, a Burn Notice is completely filmed in Miami.
Oh,
and he can tell that for a second. He's like, that's L.A. That is so L.A.
Mm-hmm. Are the palm trees different from the
if you listen to him,
location.
Yes. That
those leaves do not resemble.
Those are not Miami leaves.
Pause it. That is nowhere in Miami. Every time.
Pause it. I like it. All right, Stephen Thompson, how about you? Returning shows.
My returning show. Well, I watch very, very little in the way of what most would describe as good television.
Mm. That is
That's
very
true.
Apparent.
So I discovered recently that what I was totally ready to have back is the original version of The Apprentice.
Oh.
So this is your good television.
This is, no, I'm not necessarily saying good television so much as I'm happy. I realized that I'm happy to have it back.
But, and they're all recession victims this time.
Right. Yeah, so there's like a whole depressing twist on The Apprentice.
So this all like, and there's one lady where it's like, I used to have some high powered job and now I sell cupcakes out of a truck. I'm like, you're moving up.
Yeah, yeah, really. Seriously.
You're going to have $1 billion.
Right. Well, and you're going to have like a happy life. You
she know. Sells cupcakes out of a pink truck.
That's
I'm like
two
you're
trends
doing well.
Have collided.
You could be the star of a new reality show. Cupcakes in a pink truck coming on TLC. Yeah.
That may be her aim.
But I think what Stephen was going to say is that it's, you know, this started out as a show where young, upwardly mobile MBA types who had maybe run small companies of their own came in to be mentored and to actually sort of compete for a spot working in Trump's
and
company.
Later, and it's sort then of, later marry hosts from Entertainment Tonight or but wherever it, but she came
the,
from.
But the franchise had sort of moved off of that original mark.
Right. If it were possible for a reality franchise to literally jump a literal shark, this show would have done so in... Well, we've all been misusing the word literally quite a bit lately. The Apprentice basically had a fantastic first season and a very regrettable string of increasingly uninteresting seasons.
Very true. One good season, then a lot of junk.
Then three seasons of The Celebrity Apprentice, which made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. What is the aim of... Right. You know, it's, oh, yeah, you know, I really lost interest this season ever since Donald Trump fired Sinbad. That's
actually
when the show jumped the shark.
It was kind of a blow to that season.
I'd actually stopped watching
it. We could always rely on Linda to have watched to the bitter end some of the things that none of us ever start
watching. Hey, I watched Bret Michaels gut it out until the end of Celebrity Apprentice.
But that's a very good point.
I thought you didn't watch Rock of Love, though.
Oh, no.
No. Rock of Love, I've always said, you know, there's very little television that I actually refuse to watch on some sort of
moral ground.
Discovered you had a line.
Some kind of... Exactly. You, all of a sudden you find out, oh, hey, I have a line. There it is.
It's right there, like deep under. It's like where they bury the wiring. You know.
It's over there.
Which is why you don't...
It's Linda's, Linda's invisible fence.
You can't dig in certain areas because you might hit Linda's line.
It turns out I have some sort of ultrasonic collar of taste. And if I go over the invisible fence, and, you know, frankly, almost the only thing over there is Rock of Love.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, and Flavor of Love.
And Flavor of Love.
Any of loves.
All of the...
all the spin-offs.
Yeah. All the kind of who wants to date a stripper kind of...
Millionaire Matchmaker.
Shows. Yeah. All those.
But that's a very good point, Stephen, because, I mean, the premise of the
wait,
show...
Wait, where did I make it before?
Way back. The premise of The Apprentice is that somebody apprentices at some point, as opposed to seeing Sharon Osbourne around.
Right. I want there to be stakes. It's not, you know, I'm going to give $1 million to charity. Which charity will it be? You know, I'll be like, ooh, it better not be the March of Dimes.
So, I hate them. I don't know. You know, the villain on this season of Celebrity Apprentice was Easter Seals.
I was... Damn it, Linda Holmes.
Take that, UNICEF. So, and obviously they've tried to ratchet up the stakes as much as possible by constantly having these contestants give these confessionals about how basically if they don't win The Apprentice, they're going to kill themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Or possibly start selling organs or something like that.
And in the hilariously obviously self-aggrandizing intro to the show, Donald Trump is basically like, the economy is terrible. I'm going to do something about it.
2 years ago it began. An economic crisis that swept the world and almost brought our country into another Great Depression. You may think the worst is over, but still, talented, smart people are unemployed. They're looking for work. They have no prospects. I hate what I'm seeing, and I'm going to do something about it.
He's going to do something about it by taking one narcissistic blockhead off the job market. Yeah. That's his way of handling it.
Oh.
They have not yet gotten to what I realized I miss the most about watching The Apprentice, which is that show's hilarious use of product placement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Which is sort of like, in New York, we love hot dogs. What goes better on hot dogs than mustard? Golden's is a great company. The number four mustard company. Watch your back, Frenches.
Watch your back, Frenches.
Kodak is a great company.
Oh, my God.
In New York, we love pictures. What I was going to say about the
Hydrox.
Oh, good
the
God.
Number two.
Somebody turn him off, please. Move on.
Who has the switch? What I was going to say about The Apprentice, the other thing was so funny, and this would only be funny to me. There's like almost literally no one else was watching The Apprentice who would ever notice this. But one of their sad stories was like, I'm so sad because I'm really depressed. I have no job, so I have to file for unemployment. So he's on the phone. While he's on The Apprentice, they're filming the guy calling into the unemployment office to, like, do his phone mm-hmm. claim for unemployment so his check can get there. And, of course, I used to work in the unemployment system, and I'm sitting there watching him do this going, you can't.
Yeah, you're getting paid to be on TV. I thought the same thing.
You're committing fraud.
You can't collect unemployment. First of all, you have to be available to work. You have to be actively seeking work. And maybe they make them contractors or something like that. But yeah. You would still probably have to in some. So they've got the guy on TV, you know, and the violins are playing because it's so sad for him that he has
five
to file.
Kids
for,
and
obviously, I feel for people who are genuinely unemployed. I'm not saying
right,
that.
Right.
But they're playing this kind of major sob story of the fact that he's committing fraud on television. You can't collect unemployment because you're off being on The Apprentice. That's the way
I thought the exact same thing.
It's
terrible. And also, I think that particular guy, you know, I think that the first step toward solving his problems would be to solve his massive rage issues.
Yes. That's true. Legal.
That was step one. That was step one for me.
Oh, God. Before we leave the topic of The Apprentice entirely, yes. I would just like to observe that, number one, I am not entirely convinced by Thompson's Trump impersonation.
It was a terrible,
and number
terrible
two, number
just
two.
All it entails is yelling.
He said Hydrox. Well.
Number two. Glenn Weldon verbed Sharon Osbourne.
I noticed that too. Right. Yeah. I liked that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, my returning show, and this is a little tricky for me because many of my returning shows I have spoken about frequently, and I didn't want to give another discussion about Community or Modern Family or Glee or right. any of the things.
We all thank you for this.
Any of the things that we know. I know. I'm saying I'm not.
The affable drunks. Thank you.
It should be noted that Trey is desperately trying to coin the phrase affable drunks to describe fans of the show who really should be able to name
He's
themselves.
Really trying to make affable drunks happen. Yes.
I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah. Trey is,
really
Trey is like Lacey Chabert and girls.
If you would like to curry the favor of Trey Graham, please, fans of Pop Culture Happy Hour, refer to yourself as the affable drunks.
This is like the most humiliating.
There is
thing
one
ever.
Incredibly dignity inducing way to attract fans of your show. Name
oh,
their fans
now.
For them.
But anyway, so my returning show that I want to talk about is I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about a show that is not returning quite yet.
No.
All right.
Quite
no.
Yet.
No.
Yeah, I am.
Cheating.
I want to talk to you about Parks and Recreation
oh,
on
sure.
NBC.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Which is genuinely, I would say, Parks and Rec, Community, and Modern Family are the three comedies that have sort of reinvigorated my interest in comedies. And Parks and Recreation has been nudged to mid-season by a very, very bad decision at NBC, in my opinion, to squash into this Thursday night comedy block, which has actually been pretty good. It was Community and Parks and Rec and The Office and 30 Rock. And even though The Office and 30 Rock are, you know, have flagged somewhat, those are still shows that have a lot to offer. That was considered a pretty strong comedy block. And they took out Parks and Rec. They pushed it to midseason, and it's going to be outsourced, which, again,
the
I won't
show,
go...
The show is outsourced. Right. We're not outsourcing Parks and Rec.
Right. The show is called Outsourced, and it's a very bad sort of racist portrayal of this call center in India, and I heard it referred to on Twitter this week as racist office, which I kind of can't argue completely with people who feel that way.
But see, his name is Man Meat.
That's so terribly funny.
So funny.
Nothing
it should
like
be
funny international names. It's yeah. just yeah. never isn't funny.
It should be noted that the creator of this show, has argued in many a forum, including most recently on the public radio podcast, The Business, that the humor...
Wait, no, nobody listens to public radio podcasts.
That's true, that's true. He argues that the humor in the show is actually rather like that of The Office, in that it's people who aren't entirely admirable saying things that aren't entirely admirable, so you're laughing at the people saying them, not at what they're saying.
Yeah, he's wrong. Yeah. I've seen the original pilot. They may have tweaked the pilot a little bit. I have not seen the new one that will be on Thursday, but what I've heard from everybody who has seen it is that it did not change. He's wrong about it in the sense that I think it comes off as at humor and not with humor. The point being, I don't think much of that show, and I don't see any reason why you would take a show as strong as Parks and Recreation, which there's a terrible backstory here, which is that Amy Poehler got pregnant, and the show stayed in production at the end of their season and put a delayed their hiatus so that, and she stayed working while she was pregnant because they knew that she was going to need to take time off, and they wanted to make sure that they had their shows ready in the can to go on in the fall, and so they stay
and then
they
put
work
it on hold.
And then they get pushed to mid-season. So she sort of soldiered through this pregnancy issue for nothing in the end, which is sort of tragic. But
she did get a baby.
Well, yeah.
Out of the ordeal.
Not what I meant. Not what I meant. I meant the working through the pregnancy part. You know what I meant. See if I ever send you another 10,000 word recap of reality.
It grows
show
with every passing moment.
That's right. Next time
it's over. Anyway, so the thing about Parks and Recreation is it started off quite weak in its first couple of episodes. And a lot of people looked at it. It has creators in common with The Office. It has great actors on it. And people looked at it and sort of thought, this is not exactly firing. And if you want to know why some critics have been a little bit more patient with this new show, Running Wild, by the Arrested Development folks, it's things like this where people have memories of seeing comedies that weren't really firing at first. In fact, The Office was this way, too.
Yeah.
And then over time, they did kind of catch the rhythm. And when Parks and Recreation came back last season, it just became absolutely fantastic. Everybody on it is so funny. The writing is outstanding. It's really observant about kind of human beings. I think everybody wondered at the beginning whether the Amy Poehler character was just going to be a Steve Carell as Michael Scott on The Office character. She's much more competent than that. She's not actually bad at her job. She's actually pretty good at her job.
Ron, did you get my texts?
No.
Did you get my emails?
Mm-mm.
Did you see that I paged you?
I did not.
Did you check your voicemail?
I didn't.
We have a criminal emergency in our hands. Someone planted a gateway drug in the community garden.
Okay, call the cops.
That'll leak to the press. Then there'll be an investigation, and they'll find my fingerprints on the manure, and then we'll lose our funding.
You don't have funding.
And we never will, if this gets out. Look, I will call the cops, but just give me one day to deal with this internally, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. And listen, if this thing blows up, I was never here. I would like to be president someday, so no, I've not smoked marijuana. I ate a brownie once. At a party in college. It was intense. It's kind of indescribable, actually. I felt like I was floating. Turns out there wasn't any pot in the brownie. It was just an insanely good brownie.
She's just strange, which I like a lot more.
Right.
And she's actually a very compassionate person. She doesn't have the meanness of Michael Scott. And in a lot of ways, it has a lot of the charms of The Office without some of the things that I think have sometimes dragged it down. So I'm just taking this opportunity to say I am hoping that this outsource thing is going to last about 2 weeks.
I have not seen the outsource pilot. Mm-hmm. I do, to a certain extent, feel a certain amount of sympathy for the makers of that show being sort of plugged into the middle of what has become kind of a cultish block of television and sort of having all this built-in ill will from a lot of the public as represented by us.
I can't feel too terribly sorry for them getting a spot in that lineup. It's not personal. I think it was made with good intentions. I don't think they knew how it was going to come off until they showed it. But one thing I've had conversations with a couple of people about is if you watch this show, the number of jokes in this comedy that would still not only be good jokes, but would still even be jokes if nobody in the show had an accent is very, very small, surprisingly small. It just misfired horribly. And they found themselves, I think, somewhat to their own surprise, facing down a lot of people who sort of looked at it and thought, Are you kidding me?
Right.
Is this really your pilot? My first thought when I saw that pilot was, it will never be aired.
Wow.
Even though it had been picked up.
Wow.
Because that's how much I thought, they're not going to show that.
You know, one of the new sort of twists on this fall TV season is that beloved Thursday night lineup is now up against a bunch of other beloved shows, including The Big Bang Theory. And that's another sitcom that I know you are a big fan of.
I'm a big fan of The Big Bang Theory. And Thursdays are going to be very, very tough because The Big Bang Theory has had typically a lot more viewers than Community.
Right.
They're both beloved by the people who love them, but that group with Big Bang has been a lot bigger.
Right.
And so I'm very concerned about Community in that regard. And there are a lot of people who like both. I mean, they're both smart comedies. They both have reputations for being, you know, comedies for intelligent people who like good writing. So you're kind of
forcing people. They both have massive internet followings.
Well, there's so much on that isn't good that it's extremely frustrating as a viewer to feel like, why do you have to take two of the few things that are good and try to use one to kill the other one?
It's like sitting in an empty movie theater and having someone sit down right next to you.
It's exactly right in front of you. It's exactly like that.
So what is Outsourced up against?
They've juggled the lineup around. But the other thing that's on that night is the Shatner.
Oh,
the Shatner.
Bleep My Dad Says show.
Which, again, is going to be a matter of just taking this terrible, terrible show and pairing it with Big Bang, which is this great. I sort of think Thursday night's going to be a big train wreck until it sort of gets ironed out, and I'm afraid that there's going to be collateral damage to shows that I like a great, great deal.
Right.
So,
well, you're going to wind up with like the equivalent of Caroline in the City or The Single Guy succeeding.
Perennial problem.
And so I'm just very fearful that if it winds up being something where the Shatner show gets carried along on the strength of the Big Bang Theory, and meanwhile Community gets crunched, or they have a hard time finding, you know, the right way to bring Parks and Rec back, or by the time they bring Parks and Rec back, then the CBS block on that night is established. And
the sort of death watch for Outsourced actually reminds me of when, as the sort of person who was very excited about the return of The Amazing Race, only to be told that it was going to be a mid-season replacement, immediately embarked on a vigil praying for the death of Viva Laughlin, starring, which was the huge...
Didn't require much praying.
Well, that's the thing. It's like praying for the death of like a 108-year-old...
it's true. It's true.
Emphysema patients.
Thank you. Not that we would ever do that. No.
We love emphysema patients.
We do. The older the better.
Especially the elderly ones.
All right. Now we're going to do a quick round of new shows and tell me one that you're curious about.
Yeah, I got very little to go on.
I may or may not weigh in on whether or not it's worth being curious about. We'll go around the other direction. Stephen, why don't you start?
I have virtually nothing to go on here because I only watch garbage.
Yeah, it's true.
But I was actually curious, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, this Mike and Molly show, which seems to me, I know nothing about it, but it seems to be maybe trying to go in a Roseanne place that has not been gone. I mean, the King of Queens kind of went there a little bit about sort of everyday, the notion of kind of everyday working folk and kind of touching on actual people's actual lives and what they're actually like.
It's not real good in the sense that the jokes aren't real good.
No, is it just called Mike and Molly?
It's called Mike and Molly. It's created by two of the guys who are from Two and a Half Men. So it's a very, very CBS.
these guttural rumblings.
It's a very, very CBS sitcom kind of sitcom. It's a romantic comedy, essentially. And I do think it's an effort to have leads who, you know, they meet at Overeaters Anonymous, and she's a school teacher and he's a cop. And I think it is an effort to try to get away from having everything be about fancy pants people. It certainly is an effort to, you know, say you can have people who don't look like everybody else on television. In that way, it's admirable. And the leads are wonderful. Her name is Melissa McCarthy. She was on Gilmore Girls and some other stuff. She's great. She's really, really appealing. His name is Billy Gardell, and he was when I saw him at Press Tour, he's just incredibly charming, incredibly winning, and, you know, gave this great speech about how he's used to always playing the cop, the bad guy, or the neighbor, I think it was. He's about 40, and he said, you know, for a guy like me, it's a little shocking to find yourself in the lead of a show because it's just not the kind of thing that would normally happen.
Right.
So in that sense, I do like it. You're really getting by on the strength of the cast, which is quite, quite appealing.
You just wonder, I mean, we talked about shows that got off to slow starts. Mm-hmm. Seinfeld got off to a very slow start. Cheers almost got canceled after a few episodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, sometimes these, you know, comedies in particular, I think dramas, it's harder because you're expected to be following this narrative, and there are certain shows like Heroes or Lost or whatever, where the audience is almost bound to shrink just because you're going to have this attrition because people aren't going to try to jump in midstream.
Right.
But with a comedy, you can hit a groove and actually grow.
I wouldn't rule it out with that show. They're going to have to sort of get a handle on how much of the humor is going to be about the size of these people. There's a joke with two fat guys getting wedged into a stairwell. And I sort of said, yeah, if you can't stop making that joke, the show's not going to work. Because it's meant to be sort of a warm show.
Right, you're supposed
to. And that's very mean humor, and it's not going to work, those two things. So we'll have to see. I mean, it definitely has some charms, has some limitations to it.
Well, Mike and Molly, that's the one that I was curious about.
How about you, Trey Graham?
I'm going to say, not because I really expect it to be terribly good, but just because of what it is, I'm going to say Hawaii Five-0.
Okay.
I TiVo'd it last night, but I haven't watched it yet. And I'm curious about it, mostly because the original was one of those things my dad watched, but I never did. I never watched it with him.
Bleep, my dad watched.
Yeah, exactly. And in my head, it's kind of mashed up with Magnum P.I. You know, maybe it's just the Hawaii connection. So, you know, in my head, it's a little jokey and a little hacky. And I'm not sure that it actually was. And either way, I'm really curious to see what they've done with it in the age of angsty, darkish, gloom-fueled reboots that are at the same time
slow motion,
very serious.
Slow motion autopsies.
Right.
It's somewhere in the middle. I mean, they've kind of taken... It's darker, I think, than sort of a fun Magnum kind of show. But it is fun in places. And the again, you know, there's some nice interplay with the cast and stuff like that. I've written about that show quite a bit, but yeah. How about you, Glenn Weldon?
Well, I'm not really a horror guy. And yeah, I love Cougar Town. No. I kid.
Wow.
no, I don't love Cougar Town. But I'm missing...
Glenn Weldon hates Courtney Cox @gmail.com.
I'm missing the horror gene. I find, usually when I see anything horror, I just find it joyless and punishing and weirdly moralistic, weirdly judgmental.
Very often,
sure.
And so whenever I try anything, unless there's a lot of humor thrown into the mix, I come out of it thinking, well, that was sanctimony plus entrails. And I'm not interested in
Equals fun.
Equals fun. The exception I make, and I make it regularly, is for a comic book series called The Walking Dead, which is by Robert Kirkman. It's out of Image Comics. The reason it gets a pass from me is because of the storytelling, which is great. I mean, the tropes of the genre are zombie apocalypse, ragtag survivors trying to kind of get together for safety. They're trying just to find a place free of the zombies, but the zombies, they just keep coming. And
as they're wont to do.
And it's really, really good. He paces these books so well. At the end of each issue, there's a splash page that just punches you in the gut. Spoiler, if you're going to be watching the AMC 6-episode miniseries, which premieres October 31st, do not get used to too many of these characters.
Man, you won't believe the panic.
The broadcast stopped.
And that was the last we heard.
My wife and son, they're alive.
If they got out of here.
They're in Atlanta.
Why there?
Military protection, shelter, food. They told people to go there.
Said they were working out how to solve this thing.
Listen, one thing. They may not seem like much one at a time, but in a group all hungry.
Man, you watch your ass.
I don't know if they're going to stick to the books too much because the books are now, they've been going on for a long time, but and it's only 6 episodes, but it's on AMC. It's written, directed, and produced by Frank Darabont, which would normally, normally that would actually concern me because he did...
You were not a Shawshank Redemption
He
guy.
Did Green Mile, he did Shawshank, you know, and his impulse seems to be doing exactly right. That soaring music,
mawkish.
That sort of that emotional uplift.
Grand sweeping camera moves.
I have still not forgiven him for that very scene in Shawshank where the opera music comes on and everybody kind of stops and looks heavenward, and then you hear Morgan Freeman going, we didn't know what them two Italian ladies was singing about, but we felt sure it was something that bespoke the inevitable regret of the inchoate phantasmagoria of the human soul, or whatever he said. Something ridiculous.
Fairly certain that was not the line.
I should tell you, there exists on YouTube a video of that scene, only instead of the opera music, he's playing the CeeLo song.
Oh, even better. Well, I mean, let's, for verisimilitude, if you played opera in a prison, you'd have a prison riot.
Right, there would be a lot of banging going along
with it. If you played opera in this room, I think somebody's not getting out of here without getting shanked. Because, geez. But I am really looking forward to this series because if they know what they're doing, and I'm reasonably assured that a zombie apocalypse is not a place for soaring uplift and
That's what you think. That's what you think. They would have said the same thing about prison.
Yeah, that's true.
But then those two Italian ladies started.
Italian ladies.
What was the show called again?
Oh, The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. Again, I've talked so much about the new shows already that it's difficult to find anything to talk about. But one of the ones that I mentioned at one point, but I haven't written much more about, and a good example of one where my interest goes nowhere past, nowhere farther than curiosity, is an ABC show called My Generation, which a lot of people really do not like the pilot. It is on some people's I hate this show list. But from my perspective, it is sort of a soapy, but potentially with a little bit of heart to it kind of show. The same way I thought of shows like Party of Five and 30-something and stuff like that. Not necessarily destined to be the greatest thing on television, but possibly something involving that I would sort of TiVo and then sit around on a Friday evening. One of the few when I don't have plans.
like all my evenings spent emailing PDFs.
Exactly, exactly. And just kind of sit around and catch up with it. It has a very complex framing device, very complex, in which it's essentially two faux documentaries in one because it's a faux documentary about a bunch of people who are now 10 years out of high school, but they had a documentary made about them when they were in high school, and now the documentarian has found them again. So it's a mix of the old documentary and the new documentary, and it's constantly going back and forth. Terribly complicated.
And so, class of 2000, this is our moment.
Live in Kauai and I surf.
Hello, Steven, it's Carolyn.
Wait, who?
We slept together on prom night. We have a son.
What?
I live in D.C. now. I work for a congressman.
You're not still pining over Anders, are you?
That was 10 years ago.
Give it up for the prom queen and king.
You know he's married, right?
But every now and then they find...
But there's also a huge ensemble cast of telegenic people.
Huge ensemble cast of pretty, pretty people with various classic problems of the heart. But there are a couple of nice performances in it, and I sort of looked at it and I thought, this is the kind of thing where, depending on whether it remains remotely involving, it's kind of in that whole, you know... Like I said, these sort of nice network, soapy, harmless sorts of shows. It's not going to be a great show, but I'm curious to see what they do with it. So,
is My Generation funny, poignant, or both? I mean, the clips I've seen, the trailers I've seen, lean toward funny.
No, it's a drama.
I was going to say, I've seen more poignant.
It's a drama. It's a drama with comedic,
like,
poignant.
Whoa, I have a son.
I'm
out.
It's not for you. It's not for you, Glenn Weldon. Absolutely not. I would never claim such a thing.
It wants you to care.
Yeah. It does want you to care. It does.
Good luck.
All right.
I will probably never see it.
I am sure you will. I've got so many things I have to get you to watch before we would ever get to anything like that.
I have
that.
Gotten through the first season of Community in its entirety, and I love that show with the white-hot intensity of A Thousand Suns. And the next TV show that I'll be digging into is Parks and Recreation.
Outstanding. Good choice.
In terms of callbacks to other things, I have purchased The Hunger Games. The book that I have been charged.
Progress.
With. The Stephen Reads a Book project.
I have
moving
smelled
along.
Glenn's copy of The Hobbit.
The Stephen
it
Reads a
smells
Book.
Smells really good. It smells awesome. And I never smell books.
Doesn't smell like Hobbit feet?
Doesn't smell like Hobbit feet.
It smells awesome. And I have a particular thing that I don't care about how books smell. And it smells really, really good.
Aww.
It smells like wisdom and friendship.
Like a quilt.
Like a quilt.
Like a quilt. Made of
oh, my
all
God.
All right, go ahead, Thompson. All right. I'm sorry,
so
I cut you
the,
off.
Yes, the Stephen Reads a Book project has progressed to the point of Stephen has purchased a book. I have not yet scaled the Mount Everest that is opening the book.
There you go.
But in
maybe
a,
steps.
In a soon-to-be-recorded podcast of Pop Culture Happy Hour, I will have actually... read that book. My self-improvement is it's slow moving, but
awesome.
I will watch
so by soon you mean Christmas
2011.
So I think that's about all we have this week on Pop Culture Happy Hour. Stephen, you had one thing you wanted to mention.
Yeah, we have a URL. Now, we've had a URL before. It's npr.org. But we have an extra special URL where you can find all of the Pop Culture Happy Hours that we have recorded and produced so far. If you go to npr.org/PCHH, or as I like to call it, if you go to npr.org/PCHH, you can hear all 6+ hours, either reliving or newly discovering past episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can find them there.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad. I'm so glad that all of our not at all lonely and sad fans who we know would never stoop to such.
Well, you can curl up with a loved one.
Curled up.
One headphone on each head. One like earphone piece. Yes.
Absolutely. Just stick your noggins together.
That's right.
That's about it for Pop Culture Happy Hour this week. Thanks all you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And you can follow all of us on Twitter. And the blog is at NPR Monkey C. And Stephen, how do we follow you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at I Dislike Stephen, spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
How about you, Trey?
I am on Twitter at Trey Graham, which is spelled
Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker.
Never gets old.
How about you, Glenn Weldon?
I'm at G-H Weldon.
Is that it?
That's it.
You don't have a song
or
anything?
There's no punctuation.
You can also follow our fantastic producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike, K-A-T-Z-I-F, and his band, Hello Command, of course, provides our music, which you're probably listening to right now, which some of you have really expressed quite a fondness for. So
I would like to see that song available for purchase at some point.
I agree. We're going to have to work on Mike about that one. All right. He's making a very noncommittal face, folks, so just keep submitting those requests, and we'll see you guys next week.